providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed that segment with Dana Lyons as we really dove into different markets and how Dana is trading those more from a fund manager slash short-term trader perspective. We are now chatting with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer of Merk Investments. Now, Axel, it's been, I believe, a couple months since we last had you on the show. Over that couple months, we've seen a lot of the same in terms of market sell-offs and general bear market action. It is now, though, a bit more accepted that this is a full-blown bear market. A lot of people are pointing to some of the recent economic data saying the U.S. is in a recession right now. And everything, of course, ties back to the Fed and their policy. Let's start with the general acceptance that this is a bear market. Axel, how are you treating, how are you viewing this bear market that seems to be, at least right now, fairly orderly, taking a stair-step pattern down with everything being pulled down lower?
Yeah, Corey, great to be with you again. When you say recession, orderly, this all sounds very linear. And this market is anything but linear because things are all over the place. Let's start out with recession. Well, we'll probably have two negative quarters of GDP growth, or lack of growth, but the bureaucrats actually are deciding on what is a recession in the U.S., and they'll tell us in a year or so that this is not a recession because they will look at not GDP growth, but a whole metric of numbers, and guess what? They're not all pointing to recession. Does it matter? Right? Does it matter whether the bureaucrats tell us whether recession is or not? But part of the reason why we care about recessions, aside from us keeping our jobs, is that risk assets, the S&P 500 and the like, tend to do better during economic expansions. And they, of course, yeah, part of it is we got to have a look at the sledgehammer called the Federal Reserve. And you point out the bear market, right? Well, there's always a bear market somewhere, I suppose. That's how the saying goes, I think. There's a lot of relief currently in the markets. But the reason I caution about any move really is because once inflation is high, which we have, nothing is linear anymore. We are unleashing a rather unstable dynamic. And so we'll feel good for a few days or maybe weeks even, and then we'll get whacked. And whatever theory you have, you got to throw out of the window. And part of it is, if you just think about where we are, right? We've had high inflation. Federal Reserve has started to hike rates. And so now we're going to come into this era where the year-over-year comparisons are going to get such that the inflation numbers are going to tick down, but the economic numbers are going to worsen. And guess what? We may have reached peak hawkishness. And so all of that is going to throw your view of the markets upside down every few weeks as we go back and forth. And even as inflation goes down, it's not going to go down to 2%. It's going to be quite volatile in the months to come.
Well, Axel, when we talked last time, you had just launched your stagflation ETF, and we had the ingredients mostly there for stagflation, the high inflation you've mentioned. We have the high energy prices, kind of reminiscent of what we saw in the 1970s. We have the slowing growth in the GDP. But over the last, let's say, 3 to 6 months, we've started seeing more and more signals that the labor markets are weakening. So we're seeing tech companies lay people off or freeze hiring. We're seeing small businesses shed workers for the last 6 months in a row. We're seeing the weekly jobless claims up about 4 months in a row. Do you think the ingredients are there that we are in stagflation? And could that lead to a prolonged sluggish period where they just can't keep hiking as aggressively as they plan to?
So when we launched the Merck Stagflation ETF in May, we didn't launch it because we think there would be stagflation for a week or for a month. If you look back into the 1970s, we had stagflation for a decade plus, so late 60s and in the early 80s. And by the way, we designed the ETF that hopefully in a normal environment, the stagflation ETF is going to behave more like a fixed income fund, and we just have extra juice in a stagflationary environment. But the reason why stagflationary periods last that long is because of what I just alluded to. It is not linear. When you're faced with a supply shock, supply shocks are stagflationary. Inflation goes up, labor markets tend to weaken. The reaction by policymakers that is politically acceptable is economically the wrong thing to do. And you've talked about it, right? When you give people a stimulus check, and obviously many people lost their job through no fault of their own, but when you overstimulate the economy, but you cannot fix a supply problem, the only thing you can do is you can push up prices. And so similar with the price controls, or just look at what's happening in energy right now, how we may be restricting supply with the sort of policies we have in the US rather than trying to boost it. And that is why stagflation lasts for a while. And also we have the stop and go Fed, at least the very severe risk of that, that they're going to say, all right, we have peak hawkishness now because the economy is slowing down and inflation numbers are quite possibly going to improve a little bit, right? And then they take the foot away from the brakes. We had Bernanke, the former Fed chair, write an editorial in the Wall Street Journal the other day. Oh, don't worry. We know so much more in the 1970s. Well, by all means, we might know a little bit more, but they're human beings. They're human beings at on the fiscal side. They're human beings on the Federal Reserve side. And if we have a weakening economy, there's got to be a lot of pressure to do something about it. And then on top of that, if some of the inflation numbers, the year-over-year comparisons improve a little bit, I'm not saying they're going to be great, but they're going to say, oh, we'll pause, we'll wait. And so the temptation to do the wrong thing is just so incredibly high that the risk of stagflation lasting many years is in my view, is very, very elevated.
So, Axel, the big theme that I'm getting from you here is this peak hawkishness term. And if that is true, if the Fed does at least slow down some of their rate hikes, who knows if they're going to fully stop or even start cutting rates, what does that look like in terms of capital flows? I ask this because when the Fed was keeping rates low, injecting money into the system, we saw risk assets move higher. Tech sector was moving higher. Even stuff like crypto was moving higher. It's a very different environment now. What does the peak hawkishness look like to you? If we're not hiking as high or as much, but maybe the Fed isn't just throwing money back into the markets.
So first, in some historic context, historically, the market prices in rate hikes much longer than they happen in practice. And that's usually because a recession comes, quote unquote, out of the blue. There's some disruption. And so all the good intentions to continue to hike rates are going to be thrown out the window. Just a few weeks ago, the market was pricing in that we'd have rate hikes a few months ago until last summer, then last spring, then last December. And as of when we're speaking, the December rate hike is dropped. The odds of a December rate hike has dropped below 50%. And so we are already kind of moving further and further in that direction. And that's just out of today's perspective. What I'm alleging is that right now, of course, the Federal Reserve has egg in their face. They have to hike rates presumably by 75 basis points this month. And then in late August, Mr. Powell will speak at Jackson Hole and will have to kind of say how tough they're going to be. But then the next Fed meeting is not until late September, September 21st. And by then, we'll have more shoes dropping on economic data. I mean, we just had... and I'm not giving company recommendations. Federal Express is going to stop deliveries on Sunday because they don't have enough business. We had AT&T's indicate people don't pay their phone bills anymore. Those are indications of a slowing economy. Now, I'm not suggesting they're going to lower rates. I don't think they're going to lower rates anytime soon unless there's something much more serious coming along. But they'll pause. You also have folks at the Fed who have been saying, all right, it's time to caution. The reason that the Federal Reserve seems to be micromanaging expectations is they don't want the market to get ahead of itself because they're really worried about financial conditions tightening too much. And just as a reminder, the whole point of hiking rates is to, quote unquote, tighten financial conditions to slow down economic growth. And so I think we'll get some more hawkish talk, but ultimately we have reached that peak hawkishness.
Yeah, Axel, it is interesting that they keep leaking information through the Wall Street Journal to manage expectations like they did last time on the 50 basis point rate hike going up to a 75 basis. So they're trying to pour a little bit of cold water on the 100 basis point idea. But eventually, if they do get to that point, let's say after September where they pause, the markets are pretty forward looking. And we've had a number of people on the show, Axel, that believe that whenever they do that pause, that's going to be a shot across the bow that a lot of markets may say, aha, they're closer to starting to cut rates. Maybe it's not until Q1 or Q2 of next year, but we're on that path where they can't keep hiking. Do you think all markets will benefit uniformly from that kind of a message or from that kind of a forward-looking statement? Or will something like the safe havens, like bonds or gold, do better in that kind of environment because they're anticipating the cuts are on the horizon?
Well, what you see is what you get. I allege we already see this unfold in the markets. And it's part of the reason why gold, at least as we're talking today, is again bouncing back, because the market is pricing in more that the peak might be behind us, right? If you also, if you look back as how high the federal funds rate should have gone, might have gone, we're down from that peak. And so on the equity side, we obviously have the economic slowdown as well. On a day like today, precious metals outperforming equities. But let's not forget, this is not linear, right? We will have cross currents. Whatever your view is, how it is going to unfold, your views is going to be challenged in the coming weeks and months, because there will be some data that's going to be high, some low. What you want to do is you want to have a clear picture of where you think things are going to go, and then you want to cross-check it and see whether your thesis gets completely debunked or just challenged, because otherwise you're just going to be almost certainly losing money as you change your point of view all the time. By the way, just on that note, we did have the European Central Bank just raise rates a little higher than was priced in. And so we are in a situation now where the Federal Reserve may be at or past peak hawkishness, and we have some other central banks, notably the Europeans, are only getting started on that. I'm not suggesting that the Europeans are going to go very high, but this talk about the dollar going through the roof and everything, there's a lot of bad news priced into Europe. Now, Europe is a mess by all means, but there's a price for that. It's in Russia's interest to keep gas flowing just as much as it is in Europe's interest to receive that gas. And so maybe they will continue to hike a little bit more. They also, by the way, have tools to do their firefighting, to bail out the periphery. And so I wouldn't be surprised that in the U.S. we might have reached peak hawkishness. We're late cycle, which is historically pretty good for precious metals. They obviously, some of them have been pretty beaten, especially on the mining side. And on the equity side, I think we may see continued rotation, right? The darlings of the previous cycle may continue to suffer, but there will be some value stocks that presumably will do well. As a reminder, after the year 2000, small cap value actually had positive performance, whereas the growth stocks did terribly. I'm not giving investment advice here, but just as I said before, there's a bear market always anywhere. There's probably a bull market somewhere all the time.
Just waiting for that next bull market, or at least some sectors to start outperforming. But Axel, is there one, two sectors, markets that you're going to be watching in terms of using them as a barometer to see just how enticed investors will be to get back into either risk assets or risk off assets?
Well, sure. We look at all kinds of sentiment indicators. We're looking at breadth and depth in the markets, and keep in mind, right, this is late July, August coming up. We have a briefing every morning, and on the mining side, but that no news anywhere. And that's because the brokers are all on vacation. Everybody's on vacation. So nothing happens when everybody is on vacation. And that obviously has impact on liquidity. Now, that said, dictators in the world love to start invasions and crises in August when everybody else is on vacation. So it doesn't mean there's no risk in the market. But yes, you do want to look at how risk sentiment is in different spaces. Overall, markets are functioning reasonably normally right now, but the liquidity is quite low.
Well, Axel, what about the commodity sector? Because if we do go into a more recessionary period or even an extended stagflation where there's just sluggish growth, a lot of people would suggest that the economies would get hit. But if we continue to see all the supply shortages in so many commodities, whether it's the base metals or even an energy, there's really not enough supply. So even though the Fed is killing the demand side, where's the supply going to come from? How do you think that all balances out in the commodity sector?
Well, in our stagflation ETF, we invest in oil, gold, real estate, and inflation-protected securities. And then the reason on the commodity side we invest in oil and gold is because they, in a 70s-style environment, have done well. Now, clearly, oil is off from the peak, but it's let's assume. I mean, we haven't talked about China, right? They want to spend $1 trillion to reflate their economy. There is going to be demand for these things. Who knows what's going to happen with the gas supply in Europe, but there's going to be tension for an extended period. And so the news, and take the 1970s, right? Oil prices after the oil crisis, they didn't just plunge and go back down to earth. It's going to be volatile. Now, on the broader scope, we're supposed to be transitioning to this green economy. Well, good luck with that, right? Because all these critical minerals we need for that, how are you going to produce enough of those? We are looking into how to help finance some of the miners, and please feel free to reach out to us to see how you can participate in that potentially. But that's not easy to ramp up that production there. Everybody has their wonderful calendars on when they want to get rid of the combustion engine and electrify the grid. I mean, we took since the Industrial Revolution to get to where we are now. You cannot change that economic model globally in that shorter period. And so, yes, there will be squeezes, which I say squeezes because it's not just prices going high. There's going to be volatility as there's going to be a battle for those sort of resources.
Axel, how's the dollar playing into all this? Because you mentioned earlier, look, the dollar has been moving higher. There are even still some dollar bulls that think the dollar will go much higher from here. We've seen a little bit of softness, but dollar is still over 106 on the index. Do you see continued strength for the dollar, even if we are at this peak hawkishness?
Well, on a historic basis, on a purchasing power basis, the dollar is significantly overvalued. Now, that said, things can be overvalued longer than you can stay solvent, right? Things can be irrational for a long time. That said, because I think we've reached this peak hawkishness, I would not be surprised if we've seen the peak in the dollar. We're getting used to the war in Ukraine, and as messy as the European energy policy is, and I mentioned Europe because in the dollar index, at least, the euro has a huge weighting. They will muddle through this, presumably, somehow. Obviously, if Russia turns off the gas, all bets are off. We have Tiff Macklem up where you are is just hiked rates more than was priced into the market, right? So there's an appetite for higher rates in other parts of the world. And the U.S., as hawkish as they appear right now, might be the lagging one. Now, in a recession, that is dollar positive historically because it's in an economic expansion, people borrow dollars, which is kind of a short of the dollar. In a recession, it's like a short squeeze. The dollar tends to benefit. But at some point, that's going to fizzle out. And not sure whether we are there quite yet. But if I had to take a bet where the dollar is a year from now, I would think the odds of being lower than today are significantly above 50%.
Well, Axel, we've talked about gold. We've talked about energy. We've talked about the dollar. What about the bond market? For four decades, it was the place people went for safety. It was considered a safe haven. For four decades, people only knew, you know, rates kept coming down and bonds kept going up. Well, we saw that reverse in 2020 in the summer where, you know, the yields dropped to about 40 bips. And since then, yields have aggressively risen the last 2 years and bond prices have cratered. Have we entered a new era where bonds are no longer a safe haven, at least in the U.S.?
Yes, it's gotten complicated, as they say, right? The one perfect investment strategy had been the risk parity approach where you rebalance based on volatility. And a lot of leveraged players have been in there making gazillions of money for decades, except when you have high inflation, those sort of strategies break down. They have to delever. They've been some of the worst performing strategies. And I mentioned that is because a lot of things that people do with bonds don't work anymore. Now, clearly you have some pension funds that will always need to buy bonds and whatnot. But and in our stagflation ETF, we do invest in TIPS. They do have some interest rate risk, but as in the recent bond sell-off, you're just getting more going forward, right? And so there is a place in some portfolios for certain purposes, but the traditional asset allocation is very difficult. I mean, that's part of the reason why in the stagflation period, bonds don't do so well, equities don't do so well, what do you do? Mentioned we have real estate in our stagflation ETF, and part of it is because rents are likely to continue going up even in a stagflationary environment. But it's not easy, and yes. Now, at the same time, the 10-year yield often prices in cumulative interest rate hikes, right? And we've come down with below 10%, 3% as we speak on a 10-year basis, and part of it is because we'll have presumably a recession or at least an economic slowdown.
Always something to look forward to, hey, Axel, especially in these markets. We're going to wrap it up here, but boy, oh boy, it's just been an interesting year, a tough year for investors across the board. If the Fed does slow down on their tightening, well, that could help markets. We'll see where that money goes, because last time the Fed got easy, and we're not saying that the Fed will be easy yet, money flew into some high-flying stocks. Those have faded a lot from their top, but so is everything else. But this whole environment where economic data is weak, jobs data is starting to come in weak, and inflation has stayed elevated, it's not what the Fed wants, but it's what they're left with. Axel, I appreciate your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please be sure to visit our website, kereport.com. And as always, keep in touch with Chad and I through email. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Have a great one.